Welcome to the Red Voices podcast, the first stop for everything United. Today I'm joined by Nick Kopak, Adam Marshall and Steve Bartram from the club website. I'm MUTV's Mark Sullivan, and coming up in today's show, we discuss United's defeat to Barcelona in the Champions League final. We talk about the retirement of football genius Paul Scholes. We look back on the 2010-11 Premier League season. Have a quick chat about the summer transfers, including your thoughts on transfer rumours. And finally, we'll be discussing some predictions for next season. OK, let's begin with Barcelona. Steve, that disappointing defeat. We were outclassed by a fantastic side.
Yeah, no shame in that at all. We've taken some stick from fans of other clubs who revelled in us losing to Barcelona, but I defy anyone to try and beat them on that kind of form. They're just ridiculously good. There's a little troop of midgets who can pass for fun and then they will just beat you. They exploit any mistake that you make, and sadly we made a few.
Adam, they were different class, weren't they? And Lionel Messi, easily the best player in the world, and playing in that team, in that formation, it suits him perfectly. In fact, the whole team, everything they do is perfectly suited for that Barcelona unit.
That's right. I think they've got sort of three absolutely world-class players, Iniesta, Xavi and Messi, obviously. And those three, whenever one of those was on the ball, you feared they were going to sort of somehow slice us open and get a chance. And so it sort of proved, really, in the end. I've never really been at a game and been so in fear of conceding, even when we were level, even at half-time. Still had the sort of the inclination that they were going to come out in the second half and, you know, like, sort of improve on how they played in the first half, even. They did. So, I mean, like, there's no shame in it. It's disappointing to get that far and get beaten and not really be able to get close to them, but it's difficult to see what else we could have done, really.
Yeah, Nick, it takes a shine off the day, doesn't it, really? It was a fantastic build-up. Everything was geared towards a terrific football match. But Barcelona, they are far and away the best team in club football.
I think there's no doubt about that. And I think, you know, people talk about the Ajax sides of the 70s and Milan of the early 90s. I think you've got to put this Barcelona side right up there. You know, two European Cups in three seasons, a semi-final in the other one. And it's not just the results with this team. You know, they're not just one of these teams that grind out results and play poorly but get victories. They're not a Mourinho sort of side. You know, they do it the right way. They do it playing football in an attacking way and plenty of flair. And they're just a very entertaining side to watch. And yeah, if you're going to lose a European Cup final, you may as well lose it to somebody like Barcelona.
It's just irritating, isn't it, that we seem to have mastered the knack of playing in Europe just as they've become this all-time superpower.
Yeah.
Bad timing, isn't it, really?
Guardiola, on the morning of the match, well, in the press conference the night before, I thought it was incredible when he came out and said, we need to play a lot better than we did in the 2009 final. That's not good enough. I wasn't happy with that performance.
Well, they did play a lot better than they did in 2009, to be fair. I mean, I was perfectly happy with the starting 11 that was chosen. You know, that was pretty much what we all predicted, with Fabio getting the nod at right back, and happy to see Chicharito and Rooney in tandem again. So we can have no qualms about that, can we?
No, I think we stayed true to the United way, really. We went quite attacking and said, you know what, they might be the best in the world, but we'll have a go at them. People might say in retrospect, yeah, you could have flooded the midfield, played five there and just tried to hold out. And
tried that in Rome, didn't work.
Yeah, it didn't work. You know, you just got to hold your hand up. We played better than we did in Rome. I didn't think we played that badly at all. This time round, we defended really well in portions. Just, they're so ruthless that if you make a mistake, they'll punish you.
Yeah. Disappointing for Fletcher, wasn't it, Adam? Not starting again. He missed Rome, of course.
Yeah, well, at least he got on the bench, I suppose, which is more than perhaps some of us actually felt, although he didn't get on towards the end. I mean, we were talking about the bench in the office the day before the game and sort of saying how hard it would be to pick the subs, possibly even harder than the 11 itself.
As it proved, because there was a big surprise on that bench, wasn't there?
Well, we did discuss that as well. Berbatov, who would you rather have come on if you need a goal with 10 minutes to go? Probably Owen, given the circumstances. Although Berbatov may be perceived as a better player, if you need someone to grab you a goal, Owen was that man. I mean, it wasn't really worth bringing him on, I guess, towards the end of the match because the game was lost. But he is the sort of person who can sniff out a goal. But
what about a player to bring on to actually hold the ball and keep possession? Because we didn't have the ball for long spells, and when we did get it, we needed to keep it longer.
It's just whether Berbatov would have been able to do that so high up the pitch unless he dropped sort of quite far deeper, and then Rooney's role would have been sort of changed. And obviously he was our main influence and sort of charge going forward. So it's like we can always speculate, and we could say maybe we could have tried to bore them and you know, stifle how they were playing, we still probably would have lost, you know, realistically, yeah. you know, even yeah. playing that, and then we would never have known whether we could have attacked them. At least we know now, perhaps, not to go quite so attacking next.
It's strange, isn't it? I mean, we're all United fans here, but it feels less disappointing to have lost to that side than it would a team who we thought we should have beaten.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think any side in the world would have matched Barcelona. If you're going to lose a final, you may as well lose it to the best team in the world. And as I said earlier, I don't think there's any doubt that that's what Barcelona are at the moment. And we gave a decent account of ourselves, I thought, especially early on in the match. We started very well. I think it was a bit disappointing. Hernandez, we just weren't able to get Hernandez into the game. It's not a criticism on his performance. I thought Barcelona defenders did very well. They played very high up the pitch. They caught him offside three or four times in the first 10 or 15 minutes. And then there seemed to be quite a gap developed between our midfielders, and because our midfielders were dropping deep to obviously counter Barcelona's attacking threat. And then when we did get the ball, it was just long balls up front to Hernandez. And in the hope that he might latch onto one, but Barcelona defenders were very clever and managed to play him offside quite a lot, or just, you know, get the ball off him very quickly as soon as he got it.
Sir Alex has said he's up for a challenge. He has said his next challenge is to find out how to match and surpass the mighty Barcelona. If anyone can mount a challenge and be successful in it, it's Sir Alex, isn't it?
It is. He's done it so many times before, and he's built and he's rebuilt teams and he's tweaked teams and he's found ways to stop teams that are seemingly invincible. But this time I'm not sure. Well, I'm sure he'll give it a go, but at the moment it's hard to, as Adam was saying just before there, it's hard to know how you actually approach Barcelona. Do you attack them? And that didn't work. Do you sit back? They'll probably, you know, inevitably grab a goal sooner or later. They'll draw you out and then, you know, just slice open the defence with one of those passes from midfield. So it's very difficult to know.
Can you
how
be really physical
Real
against
Madrid
them?
Real Madrid tried to be very physical and kick them off the park. And
that's tough as well.
I think they can match that, yeah. They've got players in their side who are big and strong too.
Scary thought, isn't it?
I feel like we're sitting here and just being defeatist about it all, but they are such an incredibly good team.
It is, but as well, in modern football, you don't get... I mean, it's not since the late 80s, early 90s that someone's retained the Champions League. Mm. The whole scene shifts very, very quickly.
Football's very cyclical. This is their moment, but will it last?
Exactly. All you need is the manager to go, or an injury to a key player, or one of the players' heads to be turned by money elsewhere, Eastland, and, you know, and leave. You know, they're not going to dominate the next 10 years.
They're
I'm
a great
sure
side.
Their defence is world class either. I
mean, no, definitely not.
I don't think their Mascherano at centre backs are particularly.
It was makeshift, wasn't it? Yeah. They did defend well, I thought.
They did, yeah, on the day. But I think, like I say, if we are looking long term, I think they do need perhaps a couple of defenders to help.
I mean, they're a great side, but they are prone to the darker arts as well, aren't they? I mean, Busquets, who is one of the most annoying players ever to pull on a football shirt, I think, personally.
Statement.
That is a big statement. He frustrates me every time I watch him. He's just down on the ground, rolling around, clutching his face when his ankle's been tapped. They've got a few who are prone to a little bit of a dive, perhaps, or making the most of situations. So even the best have that little bit of a
It's like a defence mechanism,
don't they?
Isn't it? Like we said, Real did try to kick them off the pitch, and that was their way of responding to it, by getting the referee to produce cards and eventually send one of them off.
So, Busquets as well, I mean, I think he was absolutely fabulous in the final.
He was
too.
Good, yeah.
You know, in his defence, he showed that he's got class as well. His football and his passing was top class.
Yeah, just one side of him I don't like. But anyway, Casillas has said, hasn't he, that if they got to the final, they'd beat us as well.
Yeah.
Let's reverse that round. Would any team other than us there, if it wasn't us in the final, would any team have stood a chance against that Barcelona?
No, nobody. It's all supposition anyway. I mean, it's
Stoke.
Yeah,
a few people have shouted that. Yeah.
No one, no chance.
No, they were far and away the best team, weren't they? Okay, quick question for all of you. If you were going to assemble a side from everyone in the world to beat Barca, who would it contain?
I think we're having a quick chat about this. For me, I don't think... I mean, obviously, Ronaldo springs to mind, but you would perhaps want a midfielder who could snarl and get in amongst them and stop them playing. Whether there is anyone of that ilk at the moment is debatable.
De Jong's probably one of the best at that, isn't he?
I mean, Gattuso at his peak, that kind of player who could have perhaps sort of Keno...
Yeah.
You know, I was sort of crying out for a Roy Keane in the midfield to sort of actually put a tackle in at times against them. I mean, they're so quick, they do go past you, but you sort of wondered if somebody sort of snapping at their heels a bit more if they could be able to get away with it. Could
so
have
you
been
a few Ronaldos up front, a few Roy Keanes in the middle.
I think so, yeah.
A few more Vidic's.
A time machine.
At the back,
you know,
so it's time easy, travel, yeah. Cloning. Easy task.
But I think apart from that, I mean, obviously, I mean, you can't blame Edwin. He is a world-class keeper, but, you know, I suppose a goalkeeper at the absolute height of his power may have got the second one from Messi, I don't know. But to sort of say about, you know, like getting other players, it's pretty hard to sort of come up with anybody. Any 11, I think, in the world could even take on Barcelona.
It's all hyperbole, isn't it? We're never going to actually know. Just what we can say is well done to Barcelona. OK, this week saw the retirement of one of the greatest midfield players that I or anybody here in this podcast or any of you at home have ever witnessed on a football pitch, Paul Scholes. He is a genius in all aspects in the football pitch, other than maybe his tackling. But what a miss, Steve, because he often brought double figures in terms of goals to the team season on season. His creativity, his passing, he had everything.
Yeah, I mean, I've been coming to Old Trafford for 21, 22 years, and he's the best player I've ever seen, to my mind. He's just wonderful. He was absolutely functional, which is the main thing. There was no airs and graces about him. He just get out and do the job, and everything had a purpose. And I did a blog this week extolling his virtues, and one of the analogies that I used was a snooker player, a really good snooker player, thinks like three shots ahead. Scholes, he had already received the ball and passed and moved before he got it.
He's one of the players who could easily have fit into that Barcelona model we were talking about Barca earlier, because he is that good.
That's why Xavi reminds me a bit of him, I suppose. In
Xavi has said, hasn't he? He scores his favourite player.
The way he plays. I think he's just... You only really miss people when they go, don't they? And I guess, you know, the first game next season, that's when we'll really miss him. Still, with it being a close season, you sort of don't get to sort of have that impact. But like Steve said, he's absolutely brilliant, you know, and he's come through the ranks, play all his career here. Always put in top quality performances, you can't fault him at all, can you?
It's another that class of 92 gone though, Nick, isn't it? Just gigs left now.
Yeah, it's not going to be long, but well,
is that last
you end in Giggs' career as well.
Yeah,
dark
exclusive Red Voices. he's been an absolute legend, and I think it speaks volumes that you just have to look at the tributes that have been pouring in over the last couple of days.
Exactly,
and
yeah.
Not just over the last few days, to be fair. You know, throughout his whole career, people like Zidane, people that everyone else talks about as being the greatest, they all say, no, it's not me, it's actually Paul Scholes.
I love hearing Xavi and Zidane, like you say, talk about how great Scholes is.
Like Steve said, I think he just had absolutely everything, and his passing was spot on every time. He never gave the ball away. His possession stats are incredible, he could play the short pass very easily, but his long balls, his crossfield balls are a joy to watch. And you watched him up close and you see him looking around his body before he gets the ball. Exactly what Steve said again. He just knew exactly what he wanted to do with the ball. He knew where it was going to go. And he never lost it.
Players called him sat-nav in the final year of his career, you know.
Yeah.
They say he's better in training than he was on the pitch.
Impossible to play against in training. Apparently, all the lads say, don't they, if you had Scholes on your side when doing the five-a-side mini-game, you win. Yeah. It doesn't matter who else. If you've got Scholes, you win in training.
Yeah.
He left without fuss, without ceremony, like you'd expect. In fact, he did an interview with MUTV on the parade bus. That was short but sweet. Made no mention of him retiring. Next day, he's off on his holidays. Out comes the press release telling everyone that he is retiring, because he didn't want the fuss, did he? He wanted to disappear without being able to be bothered by the media.
I like that about Scholes as well. He's never been one to look for headlines or seek out the celebrity lifestyle, the glitz and glamour. He's not about that. I mean, 1 ounce of him. He loves playing football. He loves going to training, having a shower, getting off home. That's his perfect day. And I mean, that's why a lot of people love Scholes as well.
Yeah, we've all interviewed him, haven't we? And we know they're short but sweet often. He will now move into a coaching role, which that's brilliant news, isn't it? Because he'll be able to teach the kids here at United so much.
Yeah, it's absolutely massive. I mean, losing Edwin, Gary and Scholes in the same season, you need to retain that kind of experience, because you can't buy it. And anyone who's going to learn from playing with poor scores, especially those in the formative years, like sort of Tony Cliff, Pogba, Morrison, that are coming through in that in his sort of position.
Yeah,
it's an absolutely perfect education for them.
Will he make a good coach?
I hope so. I mean, obviously, the manager knows more than we do about him. But I guess even that experience passing on, he may not be the most vocal, but he can just teach them in terms of how he prepares.
Lead by example.
And, yeah, I think so. And, you know, if we can get anyone who can pass half as good as him and learn a few of his tricks, we won't be too bad. Maybe not the tackling like you said before.
The thing is with Scholes, though, it's not the... His skills aren't necessarily the ones you can actually teach or coach. He just seemed to have this inbuilt... It was his footballing brain that made him such a good player. But I don't know, hopefully he can pass on some of that to the younger players. And as Steve said, it's a massive, massive coup by the club, really, to keep him. Yeah.
Your favourite Paul Scholes moment, Nick?
Oh, God. Some of the goals spring to mind very quickly. You know, the volley at Villa Park, the volley against Bradford.
Yeah.
Another one, though, that I've always liked, against AC Milan here, was a little flicked pass to Rooney. For his second goal. It was just something that nobody else would have thought about even attempting, and he was sort of so casual with it, on the edge of the area, crowded area. Yeah. He received the ball and just sort of scooped it over the Milan defence for Rooney to run onto. I just thought the vision that he displayed there just sort of summed him up perfectly.
Adam, your favourite one?
The Bradford one, because I was at that game in the away end, managed to get a ticket quite late notice. I think the Barcelona one, obviously, you all remember.
Semi-final.
And against Inter Milan, away in the 99, I mean, it was... It wasn't a goal that actually sort of took us through, but it took a little bit of the pressure off with it being an away goal and helped us get there. So I think those three stick with
it. Steve?
Villa Park volley for me. Any goal is 10 times better for hitting the bar and going in.
Definitely, I 100% agree with you. Yeah, Villa Park in Barcelona, perfect highlights. I'm surprised none of you have mentioned that photo with Paul Scholes' tackle. If you don't know what I mean, search it on the internet. OK, so yeah, Paul Scholes, football genius, will be sadly missed. So too will miss him, his former teammate, Clayton Blackmore.
I know Scholes is a bit quiet and, you know, I think everybody knew it was coming, but I thought we might get another year out of him. I think he had a bit of everything. He had great vision. I think that's why I thought we could have still used him next year. His passing was fantastic. You know, he can hit 60-yard balls and he's straight to feet. And there's not many players around now who can do that. Hence, England tried to get him out of retirement a year or so ago. But, you know, he could always pop up and score goals. I think that was his strongest asset. You know, he'd arrive in the box and mark most of the time because his runs were good and all the runs were always in the right area.
And now, the class of 92, there's only your Welsh teammate, Ryan Giggs, left.
Yeah, it's a pity. You know, I seriously thought Scholes, he might give it another go. I'm just hoping he's not going to be kicking himself in... 3 or 4 months' time when the season's here, and he's like thinking, oh, maybe I should have kept going.
But he will keep going in a coaching role, which is great news for the club because his experience, his knowledge, his intelligence on the football pitch can be passed down to the younger generation.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I think he's learned off Brian Robson, and, you know, he's for me, he's probably between the two of them, the two best midfielders in the world. And, you know, he's got so much to show the kids out. And the big thing is timing in the box, you know, timing your runs and making the runs into the right areas. And, you know, he knows where to go to score a goal.
Now, United had their critics prior to this season, but overcame this to clinch a record-breaking 19th English League title. It was a season of drama, late comebacks, and the signing of a Mexican goal scorer who's proven to be an instant hit. Steve, your highlights from the season?
Oh, wow. Well, any game at home was great because they were just imperious at home all season. But for me, the best games to watch, the most enjoyable ones were like your typical United comebacks, like West Ham away, Blackpool away, because that's when you sort of saw the difference between us and the other teams, really. That's what the spirit that shone through in those games was really what made the difference.
Same question, Adam?
I think the Chelsea win in the Champions League was a good one when Rooney scored. Obviously, it sort of showed and proved we were capable of beating them down there, which has been quite a long time coming. In the league, I think the Hernandez header against Everton was a late one coming and pretty much relief as well. That sort of took us a step closer. And obviously the win against Chelsea was immense in the league, and the way we did that, the way we started that game literally in the first minute was amazing, and the atmosphere that day was as good as I've seen it in a long, long time.
Nick?
First half of Sunderland away. No. Maybe not. Yeah, we did things tough on occasions, but like Steve said, I think we really showed a lot of character this season. People were writing us off left, right and centre. But, you know, we had that unbeaten run that stretched on and on and on right up till 5th, 6th of February at Wolves. So it wasn't a bad season, you know, at all, really. Winning the 19th title at Blackburn was a very, very special day. That was good. As Adam said, the Champions League game against Chelsea, even the home game, the league game here at Chelsea, that was a brilliant day too. A lot of highlights, really. Like most seasons following Manchester United, you know, we're very lucky. And one day it may all come to an end, so I think we have to remember that. And
we're on here today. Yeah. It's so dark.
It is dark. He's in a dark mood, is Nick, back over there. You're right, though, Nick. Plenty of highlights. Berbatov's hat-trick against Liverpool is one that I'll long remember. Obviously, Rooney's overhead kick against City and beating City 2-1 there was fantastic. Yep, Chelsea away, Champions League, loved that one. Chicharito's back-flicked header against Stoke.
Yep.
Great moment, and I think that really, truly announced Chicharito onto the biggest stage of all. So plenty of highlights. Your players of the season, Steve?
Vidic, for me, just for being sort of top class and just doing it throughout the entire season. For portions, you can say Nani or Berbatov. Rooney came good in the end. Chicharito was wonderful in probably the last third of the season, having been good prior to that. Edwin and Giggs, it was, I'm going to sound so clichéd, but it was just a team effort, wasn't it? For me, one outstanding individual was probably Vidic.
I think in previous seasons we've had real individual star performances from individuals. Rooney last season, Ronaldo the season before that. But this season, as Steve says, and the goals were shared around everywhere, and not just the goals, but players like Vidic performing, you know, absolutely brilliantly all season. Nani, Valencia, since he came back, everyone played a part.
Park?
Yeah, Ji-sung Park was fantastic before Asia Cup duty. So it really was one of those seasons where everybody played their part in the league.
Is it cliche to say then it's a squad game and our squad was the best?
I think there were different phases of the season. There was Berbatov and Nani were outstanding when they're in the start, and neither started the Champions League.
Is that better that we've got a group of players who can all contribute at different times rather than having one or two?
I think the
key
manager would prefer it that way.
So,
it makes selection a lot easier for him. He doesn't always have to pick the one or two players that are in form at that moment. He has trust in his players that anyone who goes out there can do a job, and this season they all showed that trust was justified.
Yeah, most teams have their star men, though, don't they? Your two or three, we mentioned the Barcelona, Xavi, Iniesta, Lionel Messi triangle earlier. Most teams have their star men, so would you say that of everyone, perhaps Vidic, Rooney, Chicharito just slightly edged overall?
I mean, obviously Rooney came to the fore again towards the end of the season, and I'm glad he played so well in the final to prove, you know, people always say he doesn't play so well in the big games and the finals.
Yeah, he proves he can do it.
I said that about Ronaldo, even though he was scoring in final. I think he did, and he scored a great goal. Was probably our best player alongside Vidic on the day. I think Giggsy and Van der Sar were really consistent all season. But like I said, other players sort of came and went, didn't they? Not just to reform, but with the injury as well, like Valencia.
Carrick did well. Carrick came to the fore
towards the end. So it's sort of like, because we've got such a big squad, there are players up and down at various times, as you're bound to get, and that's the luxury of having so many players to choose from.
Steve touched on it earlier, but it was almost a season of home and away. We weren't that great away from home, but nobody else was either this season. I think when you look at it, we still were in the top two or three sides in terms of away records this term, but we only dropped 2 points at home all season, which was phenomenal, and really that's what won us the league.
Can we improve that away record? I mean, obviously we can, but will we improve it for next season? I suppose something we should really look at.
I think so, yeah. Quite a few of the games were just down to, you know, late lapses in concentration.
Fulham and Everton, perfect examples at the beginning.
You know, if we hadn't conceded late goals in those two games, we would have run away. Well, we ended up running away with the league anyway.
It was 9
somehow.
Points in the end. It was the biggest winning margin.
We'd have won it by 12, 13 if we hadn't lost late goals in those matches. So it was a season of fine margins in a lot of ways as well. And so hopefully next season some of those results will go with us.
And a fantastic season as well for the youngsters. Got to mention the FA Youth Cup winners, our first FA Youth Cup since 2003. The boys did brilliantly, didn't they?
Oh, it's great to see them all coming through together at the same time. I mentioned earlier Pogba, Tony Cliff, Morrison as outstanding midfielders. Loads of them have looked really, really good. And if they get a chance, then you would back one or two of them to take it. I mean, for me, Pogba looks an absolute thoroughbred.
Absolutely, we'll see how they all do next season. Let's hear now, though, from some of the United first team players who were talking to us on the parade about their favourite moments from a fantastic season which saw us bring home a 19th English League title.
Well, Edwin, how much have you enjoyed this so far today? The crowds have been amazing.
Yeah, no, of course. It helps you come over disappointment a little bit, of course, from Saturday. And yeah, definitely helps, but doesn't make it all right.
You've experienced this before when you've won the Champions League and other trophies in the past, but how does this compare in the beautiful Manchester weather?
Yeah, it's too bad because we had some decent weather lately, and but still a lot of people turned out, and you see the love that the club has, listen to supporters' heart and everything that they turn out for on this bank holiday Monday, and hopefully it's going to be even more at Old Trafford, I heard. So let's give them something back for the support they give us over the year.
Well, Rio, unbelievable turnout from the fans today.
Yeah, crazy. I mean, a lot of us didn't expect the turnout we got, but Man United fans come out in force and supported us as they always do, and it was a great surprise for us, really. So it's been a great season in terms of winning the Premier League. Disappointed, obviously, about the Champions League, but let's can't forget that we've had a really good season. We'd have got this and been told at the beginning of the season we'll get what we got today, and we would have took it.
Okay, so the football is over for the summer. That means it's silly season in terms of the speculation about transfers, who's going to go, who's going to come into Old Trafford. One of the first things to do, Nick, is to replace Edwin van der Sar, and it seems that David De Gea is favourite to do so.
Yeah, and we spoke a little bit on last week's podcast about this. It's not confirmed yet. I think, you know, both clubs have talked to each other, and it looks perhaps likely that De Gea will make the move to Old Trafford. But it's not going to be easy for him, I don't think. He's coming into a new country, he's a young goalkeeper. I think he will make mistakes, and as I said last week, I just hope that the fans allow him to make a few mistakes, because it can be quite an unforgiving place, Old Trafford here, and you need to be mentally strong, and I think you need the fans' support. So I hope that the fans will realise that he is young and he's not Edwin van der Sar. Nobody is. So there may be a few little wobbles early on, but he'll learn from that, and it'll make him a better goalkeeper if it is De Gea who does come.
Yeah, he's not got a lot of professional football experience under his belt so far.
No, but he's played in a Europa League final. He's been first choice for a couple of years now. He's played big games against Barcelona, Real Madrid, and he does, from what I've seen him, generally tend to do well in those big games. And as well, I think if it is him, I think he'll benefit from coming here and playing with one of the best and most experienced defences in the world. You know, got Rio, Vidic, Evra, and then Ryback to be confirmed, playing in front of him, and they're going to educate him.
So we've got a replacement in goal, perhaps. Adam, what about a replacement for the great Paul Scholes? How are we going
to
find him?
That's the hard one, isn't it? I mean, who'd you get to replace Scholes? Obviously, we've all seen Modric and Snyder being linked.
Either of those two I would love to see.
I think either of those two are top-class quality midfielders who've got similar sort of skills to Scholes. It's very hard to see outside of those couple, whether they're South American players who perhaps were not as well versed in, you know, how
Javier
they're
Javier Pastore at Palermo.
Yeah, he's one who's highly rated, isn't he? There's a few sort of decent players out there. The bigger clubs tend to wait for them to go to another team and then sort of look at them when they've actually adapted to European football. It's impossible to replace Scholes, I think, like we said earlier. We've got to be realistic. And whether we have to go for two midfielders, who knows, you know, in the summer.
Yeah, Modric is the closest thing you'd probably see around in
Definitely.
Terms of Scholes.
And he's already proven in the Premier League, so you've not got to worry about any adapting to be made.
Yeah, he's skillful, he's got the vision, he's up and down, he can start the play, which is a key thing. That's where Scholes will be missed.
Doesn't score as many goals,
no,
perhaps, as he should,
that's
Modric.
His only sort of downside, isn't it, really, to Modric? He hasn't
picked. But if he sets a few more up, then you know he'll weigh in other ways, I think.
Oh, definitely.
And as well, he's in a different team as well. Things might be geared differently towards him if he did arrive.
What about elsewhere on the pitch then? Because many rumours linking Ashley Young with a move here.
Yeah, I'm a bit surprised by the wingers that are being linked with United, because I don't think we're short of wingers. I think Nani's had a brilliant season. Valencia looks fantastic. We've got Jason Park. Tom Cleverley's coming back from Wigan, he can play out wide. So.
Young kid Cole Giggs coming through.
Yeah. Obertan, Bebe waiting in the wings as well. So I don't really get this whole clamour from the media, it seems, to bring a winger to Old Trafford, because it's not a position that I think we need.
More options, though? Another sort of strengthening of the squad and give you more different ways of being able to play?
Yeah, that's true. Young's probably quite an adaptable player.
Seen him play centre-forward for Villa as well.
Yeah, he can play up front too.
Yeah, left or right or centre.
And he's very quick. I think he'd fit in quite well here at United, but if we're going to spend money and quite a lot of it, because I think you might need quite a bit to get Ashley Young, then I'd perhaps prefer to see that spent elsewhere.
Jack Rodwell, now there's a name consistently linked. We don't know really what the situation is with Everton. Obviously, they have got debts. They will be looking to sell some players at some stage, I believe. But Rodwell, will he fit the bill? Sort of centre midfield / centre back? Don't quite know his true position.
It depends. I mean, he is very highly rated in a lot of circles, and the manager is, by all accounts, quite a big fan of his. He's had a lot of trouble with injuries, so you've not had the chance to see him in a sustained run of action, really. But better judges than me like him, so.
So why not? Yeah. Anyone else, Adam, who you think?
I'm a massive fan of Alexis Sanchez, and I've been for a couple of years. I know it's gone a bit quiet with United.
City seems to be leading the race for him.
But he's another player, a bit like Young, who could play in front three. He sort of plays a bit more up front for Udinese. Whether that's a sort of route we're trying to play a bit more fluid, you know, I know we do often play 4-3-3 anyway in terms of how we sort of line up. But I mean, it'd be interesting. I think, like sort of Steve says, maybe if we are going to buy a midfielder rather than someone like Rodwell or Jordan Henderson, maybe to go for someone like a Modric or Snyder, who's the finisher article, rather than having to bed another one of these players in and wait a couple of years, perhaps.
I wouldn't be surprised if we go down the Hernandez route again, and the manager, you know, announces a player that nobody's ever heard of. He's done it many times before. Maybe not quite as unknown as Hernandez was last year, but it's not really United's way in the last few years, has it, to sign big name players. Berbatov's really the exception. Yeah. So I wouldn't be surprised to see a young player who maybe isn't brought in for this season as such, but with an eye on the future.
I'd prefer, if we're going to do that, I'd prefer to just give Pogba a chance.
Well, actually, Steve, I'm glad you've mentioned that, because that leads on to one of these emails. This is from Brian in Salford, who says, I know there's been a lot of talk about big money transfers this summer. I think Sir Alex should look towards bringing through younger players into the first team. I've been watching the reserves this season, and I think with a little bit of encouragement, players like Ravel Morrison and Paul Pogba could compete at the top level in the Premier League. I would be interested to know your opinion on this, as said from Brian in Salford. He's obviously identified Paul Pogba. We all have, not just Pogba, but you mentioned earlier Tunnicliffe, Ravel, I mean, Will Keane and his brother Michael are fantastic. But all of that Youth Cup team, great players, and perhaps could make the step up.
Yeah. The experience has shown that if you put them in, it's sink or swim, and these lads have got the wherewithal to go on and take the opportunity to mount. I mean, look what Wilshere's done over at Arsenal. They just threw him in his teens, and you know he's integral to them now.
But is there time in the modern game to allow your younger players to flourish?
I think that's the nail on the head, isn't it? Fans in particular are very impatient. We've seen that with some of our own players who have got in the team after coming through the youth team. You know, we don't wait too long before they want a big signing instead. I think Morrison's absolutely outstanding. I think possibly even shades Pogba. I know you're a big fan of him, but yeah, I think he could be an incredible player. And I think, you know, we've got the other ones coming through as well. Tom Thorpe's a decent defender to sort of start
very
coming
good,
through his backup. Sean McGinty's another decent defender. It'd be interesting to see these sort of gradually bedded into the squad. That's the thing, whether they have to get thrown in and then we see how they do. You know, again, we'll have to wait and see, really.
Another email, I'll put this one to you, Nick. Rory in Belfast writes, surely Berbatov is too good to be on the bench next season, so how can we use all three of our best forwards to full effect?
Well, it's hard to use all three at once, especially, you know, if you line up like Manchester United do, you tend to go 4-4-2, maybe 4-5-1, but we've seen the manager, the way he'll use these forwards is to rotate them. And Berbatov, this week, there's been all sorts of speculation surrounding whether he'll stay or go. He's come out and said he wants to stay and he'll fight for his place. And he's, you know, he's not here for an easy ride. He's not in football for an easy ride. He knows that it's going to be tough. Michael Owen as well has said that he'd much prefer to play occasionally for a big side like Manchester United than play every single week for a smaller club Liverpool, for instance. So I think we've got the players with the right sort of mindset here at Manchester United, who know that it's about the team and know that you can't play every single week. Maybe Rooney's a bit of an exception to that, where it seems like no matter what you say to him, he wants to play every week. Yeah, he wants to play in testimonials, pre-season friendlies. He'd play every second of every match of the season. So that's where the manager comes in and is quite clever in terms of resting players and rotating them. And I think that will continue. I don't think we need to get rid of Dimitar Berbatov. I think there's still a role for him to play here. He finished top scorer of the Premier League this season. Yeah. You know, he hasn't done too badly here at Old Trafford.
Yeah, he's a class act. And when you think about the returning Danny Welbeck, Kiko Makeda, as well as Michael Owen signing a one-year contract extension, going to be tough to fight for your place in the striking department at United. Okay, well, with this being the last podcast of the season, we thought it would be best to make some predictions ahead of the next campaign. So, start with Steve Bartram. Mm. Will United retain the title?
Difficult to say at this stage of the season, i.e. well before it's begun. And with no transfers having taken place.
No, I want an answer now.
An answer now. Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, why not? It's going to be a lot. It's going to be a very interesting summer in a lot of ways. City are going to obviously continue their upward surge, you would think. Chelsea, if they get the right manager and bed things in very quickly, are going to be there and thereabouts again. Arsenal, Liverpool, Tottenham to an extent, maybe not Tottenham, but you know they'll be difficult to beat again. Well, I would imagine that we'll do it if we sign the right players. Yeah.
It's going to be interesting, isn't that, battle? If City do improve again, Adam, Liverpool under Kenny Dalglish have been a different force entirely. It's going to be real interesting, not just for the Premier League title race, but who will end up missing out of the top four, even?
Yeah, I mean, as long as it's not us, which I'm sure it won't be, you know. I think Liverpool had a good end to the season, but when there's no pressure on, particularly, you know, when they're going to be under pressure, if they are ever involved in the title race again, then you might see things a bit different there. I still think as a team that they're nowhere near.
But well in Suarez and Carroll, though, didn't they? Mm.
Suarez is a decent player. Carroll's still a bit unproven, I think, and a bit injury prone. But, I mean, we'll have to wait and see. It is so hard to say about next season. I mean, I think the burning question is, you know, United always, with the squad we've got, going to be up there in the league. But are we going to be able to compete with Barcelona? Are we going to buy the players who will enable us to compete on the same level as them in Real Madrid? Real have already signed 3 or 4 players this summer. Barcelona after Fabregas, obviously, and Rossi and Alexis Sanchez and top players like that. You know, they're getting better and better, and they're the benchmark that I think the manager's already said he wants to try and emulate.
You're scaring us again. It sounds even more daunting now.
If we can get to the closer to their level, we'll win the English league, and I think that's as simple as it goes. If we have to accept dominance in this country, then it's nothing to be ashamed of.
Absolutely.
I think it's going to be very tough next season, to be honest. This is me in my dark mood again today. But we are losing Edwin van der Sar. We're losing Paul Scholes. No Owen Hargreaves, although he didn't play too much of a part in last season. Gary Neville's gone. We didn't have him again. We didn't have him for the last few months of the season. But that's going to take its toll, I think, a little bit on the
side.
Everyone else is getting a year older. Obviously, a year more experience too for the younger players. But I think we can do it. But it will be a fantastic achievement. Goalkeeper position does concern me a little bit. Not necessarily who comes in, but just the very nature of change. We've been so used to having Edwin at the back, and he's so used to working with the defenders and then with him. So to have someone new come in, it's going to unsettle the team for a little bit, I think. Maybe we won't perform too well in August, September, but if we can stay there or thereabouts and then click into gear, we could still win the league.
One thing's for sure is Manchester United will certainly be in the mix and in the hunt for all of the top honours, particularly because we've still got the best manager that's ever graced the game at the helm. Okay, that's all from us this week and for this season. My thank you to my guests, Nick Kopak, Adam Marshall and Steve Bartram. If you'd like to email us, please do so. The address red.voices@manunited.co.uk. I've been MUTV's Mark Sullivan. Thank you very much for listening. I will leave you with the words of our leader, the boss, Sir Alex Ferguson.
Well, Sir Alex, this is is amazing. It must seem like a long time since you did this back in 1999.
Yes, but we're supposed to have done it when we come back from Moscow, but something, I can't remember what the reason was, but the town council or something stopped us. But tonight brings back fantastic memories. This is what Manchester United is about. Fantastic loyalty with the fans. Such a horrible day, but they're all here. What really is impressive today, the number of children are here. There's a lot of fathers with the kids at 1 year of age, 2 years of age in their head, on top of their shoulders. And that's the future of Manchester United, young people.